Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is December 21st, and we're excited because we're only about a few days from Christmas, and I'm a fanatic about Christmas. Now, I'm going to interview Jacob Evers. Now, this is going to be a great interview. Who's sitting in next to him is Jake, who is my godson, and I love dearly, and I quoted him in my sermon about a month ago, and I got all emotional about it. And then on the right of Jacob, Jacob, is Laura, which is your fiance, and you just got engaged about a little over a month ago.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I should probably remember that date, right?
Yeah. What was the date? Do you remember?
November 5th. See? There we go. November 5th.
Right. Okay, we're only talking about 1 month and a half
That's
ago.
Why I am here.
So, anyway, why is it such a day? You could have a hard marriage.
I know, seriously.
But anyway, the reason I want to interview Jacob is because he has a spitting image story of my story, which is interesting because my godson is his best friend, and you are the godfather to his children.
It's true.
Which is interesting, and you and I have very similar stories.
We do.
Because when did you, tell us about your calling and your ministry at first, when you felt the Lord was really
calling. Probably around 2003, 2004 or so is when I really kind of started to follow after Christ. It was the first time I went to a church where I actually experienced people who not just like preached at me, but actually were living it out as well. And
there,
so
there was no hypocrisy.
There was no hypocrisy. It was actually one of the first times I'd ever experienced church leadership that was living what it meant to. Yeah.
So you were part of the church prior to this, but you grew up experiencing seeing hypocrisy
kind of here and there. You know, my dad was a part of the church, but he was an alcoholic and he was like a lay leader in the church.
Okay.
And so I always just, that's what I associated with the church was, you know, my dad's still a complete jerk face.
Okay.
but
he was fine on Sunday mornings.
Exactly.
And other people.
Exactly.
He was projecting the image of,
yes,
I have it very altogether.
Exactly. Okay. So that was my vision of the church. Then I met Gateway.
Gateway. And okay. Now, where's Gateway?
Gateway's in Chino.
Okay.
So it was the church that I would eventually go from to help church plant to Grace Point, which is the church that I'm currently a part of as well.
Okay, and that's where my godson is.
Exactly. That's where we met. I was the youth pastor there. And I would say that was when I first experienced any sort of call to ministry.
Okay.
Was the pastor approached me and asked if I would be the youth pastor, and I told him no, as every respectable pastor should do it front. They should always say no.
Okay.
And then through prayer and discussion with him, him and his wife, I finally just really felt like the Lord was actually calling me to do youth ministry. This was about a year into me actually being a Christian.
Okay, so going into ministry, because I remember when I first went into ministry, you were just thinking, I'm doing God's work.
Yes.
So everything's going to go smooth.
Absolutely. Everything was supposed to be great.
People would love me.
Yeah.
People would care about
me. Of course.
And then I'm just lead, and I'm just this mini Billy Graham.
Yeah, and I'm going to have 300 youth ministry students in a church of 40.
Yes. And you know what? And then you laugh, but if you think about this, our egos are so tied up with being 300 and stuff like that, where we forget that sometimes we have to learn the progress of being Christ-like.
Absolutely.
Through the adversities that we go through. So therefore, then, so now you were in a relationship then, right?
I was. No, when I first went into youth ministry, I was not. I met my, who would be my future first wife, I guess, about 6 months to a year into that ministry.
Okay. Now, the thing is, she knew that you were really kind of interested in the ministry.
Yes.
And so she was on board. No one understands.
I think at that time. I was just pausing. It was dramatic effect. It was that slow pause.
Okay.
She, I think, at the time was on board.
Okay, at the time.
And then later would not be on board.
But she wasn't sure what that commitment would be.
I think so. Yeah, I think she wasn't sure.
That's a problem. Because you think, okay, because as you and I buy into this, it's going to be great. They just assume it's going to be.
Yeah,
easy.
It's going to be easy.
So, when did you get married?
That would have been in 2008. Yeah, 2008.
In 2008?
Thank you, yeah.
Okay, so 2008. So, the first year,
Yeah, it was great. It was smooth. Actually, the first couple of years were great and smooth. No problems.
First couple of weeks, you're doing the ministry and doing the...
Yeah.
So, because a lot of people don't understand when you're in the ministry, they just assume that there's this blessing on you, that you're not going to have ministry problems.
Of course.
You're not going to have difficulties.
Nope, never.
And so, therefore, second year... Now, in hindsight, we can figure it out. But did you see the signs of your marriage deteriorating?
I probably did closer to the third year. Okay. So, first year, second year, I think everything was pretty on point, pretty good. Life was fine and dandy like sour candy.
Fine and dandy like sour candy.
Yeah. So... Okay. It was fantastic.
I never heard of that one.
Well, that was a Simpsons reference. Sorry. I didn't, you know, just got to throw something in there. So I think everything was great. I think it was probably midway up to and around the third year is when I think we both started to realize that there was probably something not right with our marriage.
Okay. Now, did you guys see counseling at first? Or
we did not. We actually didn't see counseling until it was pretty much
done. See, and I've noticed this, and tell me if it's right, because I've been through a divorce, too.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've noticed this is we're afraid to ask for help.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know about you, but we just don't want to get fired.
Well, yes, I think it's firing. I think for me, there was a part of it, and because we went through similar situations where, you know, there was somebody else involved that was kind of wedging themselves in between our marriage, I think there's also that part of, I feel like I'm protecting myself and I'm protecting my wife.
Right.
You know, there's that aspect of, I don't want to seek counseling from a pastor or somebody like that because they may view her negatively. And I feel my job as a spouse is to help make sure that people view my spouse in a positive way.
And so therefore you project a positive.
Yeah.
So as a pastor, you suck in all this entire pain.
Yeah.
And then you're on the platform where you're doing the youth, and you're just saying, how you doing? Praise God. Hallelujah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's risen indeed. But deep down, you were just totally broken.
Oh, gosh. There were so many times where we would be arguing in the car, driving to a place, arguing when we get there. And then as soon as we knock on the door, we're sitting there holding hands, smiling.
All right.
I mean, I had friends after the fact that said, we would have never thought there was anything wrong with your marriage.
Yeah.
Because we were just so good at hiding it.
Yeah. And I understand that because the thing is, we have this fear, again, if we ask for any type of help, it's A, a weakness of your spiritual life, and B, I think you need to step down because you're not in a position to minister anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think even still, because I've seen it happen with other pastors or other ministry leaders before, there's really no avenue to come back.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be in the business of reconciliation and healing in the church, but we kind of will have people step down for all aspects, whether it's divorce or, let's say, sexual addiction or something like that, pornography. Yeah. We have this tendency to just demonize people and we pull them out of ministry, but then we don't give them an avenue to come back. We almost just taint them and say, they can never do ministry again.
Let me correct you.
Yeah.
It's not almost.
Well, you're right. That's exactly what we do. You're right. Yeah.
Because you've been tainted and I was tainted back years ago. And so, now, let's go in where it's getting deeper here, where you're just going, this marriage is falling apart now, and I need to get help. I cannot fake this because she's going to leave. And I remember my ex-wife said, if you tell anyone, I'm never going to set foot in this church. And so I had to keep it quiet to project the image that I had together.
Yeah.
So when did it get to the point where you had to go, I need to ask for help? Now, were you friends with my godson, Jake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd been best man in his wedding at that point, and we had really started to flourish as best friends by then.
So did Jacob, now this is interesting, Jake and Jacob, we're just going to call the Jakes.
Make sure you give credit to
them. I was going
to
say, Laura's over here with her hands in the air because we just talked about this.
So Jake, my godson, you were walking through him with this, right?
Yeah, more so after the initial separation happened.
Do you know what was going on?
Not till things kind of boiled over for them.
Yeah.
He called me late one night and told told me that they were gonna be separating.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk about fun? She asked me to move out on Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday?
Yeah. He is risen indeed.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was Easter Sunday. Easter I remember Sunday. we were driving home and something had happened. We'd had some sort of argument and we were living with her parents at the time and she just kind of said, you know.
Oh, good night. So were you part of the Easter service?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay,
I'd stepped down. Jake had already taken over.
Okay.
You had stepped down for about a year.
Yeah, in 2011, I stepped down to finish off Fuller.
So let me ask you this. What hit the fan for you to call him? What was going on?
I think it was the separation at that point. I was so closed off that nobody really knew what was going on. I think the first person I called was my dad, because he'd been through a divorce. It was his fault, opposite of what yours and mine was.
Oh,
it was,
so your dad was unfaithful.
Ish. I mean, he was just more of an alcoholic sort of, like, jerk face. So I love my dad now. We have a great relationship. I actually just asked him to be a groomsman in my wedding. So
he was a jerk face.
Previously.
He's a good face now.
He's a great pastor. So I love my dad with a passion.
Okay.
So
I want your dad to know that.
He knows. We've talked.
That.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So,
tell me the procedure, the steps you did. You talked to Jake, and then all of a sudden you had to be very honest about leaving and dealing with. So I would assume to get some wisdom. So if another youth pastors going through this or other senior pastors are listening to this, tell me your experience, whether it's positive or negative, with the denomination or with the church, on things that we can do on a positive that would be helpful for a pastor that's going through a divorce or that's not helpful. Did you have any people that say the stupidest things to you?
You know, the funny thing is that I always come back to the fact that, like, I remember it was probably the morning after, the first Sunday after I'd moved out, I was living with moved back in with my parents.
Okay.
So there's nothing like being 28, moving back in with your folks.
I was 30.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly. It is. So I'm 28. I moved back in with my parents.
Yeah.
And I remember waking up in the morning to my alarm, and it was probably 9:30 and church starts at 10.
Okay.
And I remember laying there and just going back and forth and thinking to myself, do I even really want to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I want to do? And I finally made the decision to go, but I remember telling myself, if anybody says anything negative to me whatsoever,
right,
then I'm done. I'm done with the church. I'm done with God. I could really care less, sort of thing.
You threw that out.
Oh, I threw it out into the universe.
Okay.
I said, God, if anybody says something stupid, like, well, maybe you didn't pray enough. I know you did. We talked about
that.
Yeah. Yeah, so if anybody said anything stupid like that, I was done.
Yeah.
And I remember walking through the doors of Grace Point in our school area. And my pastor had known at that point, and his wife, and then Jake and his wife, and others knew. But I just remember walking in and just experiencing love.
Oh, dude. Okay,
and
good.
Just people.
I don't know what you experienced.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting on peas and needles. Pins and needles.
No,
And peas and needles.
No, yeah, peas and needles, too. Yeah, exactly.
Pins and needles.
Yeah, no, I remember experiencing love. And it was probably one of the moments in my life where I distinctly remember, through other people, feeling what the love of God feels like. And people just, my pastor's wife, Nikki, constantly saying things like, you know, this isn't the end.
Okay.
You're redeemable.
Okay.
Like, you will be redeemed,
she
sort
said
of
that.
Thing. Yeah.
Now I know her. She seems like a real nice.
Oh, yeah.
Nice
absolutely. Absolutely.
Your pastor, Steve, we'll give a shout out to
of course.
Them. You're talking positive about them.
Yeah.
You had this positive experience.
I did have a positive experience.
The church. Okay.
I think one of the struggling points that I had, and now looking back, being what it is, I think they were right. At the time, I was the men's ministry leader, and I was removed from ministry to kind of heal.
Okay.
I think looking back on it, at the time I was upset.
Right.
You know, why am I being removed? I didn't do anything wrong, like all of those sorts of questions. I look back on it now, and it was only 1 year, and it was really a great year of redemption and healing and going through that process. And I think I needed that.
Right.
I just wish that it had been done with that kind of more intentionality. I know there were other people that were upset by me being kind of removed, and Steve had talked to me about it. I don't think there was any miscommunication whatsoever.
Okay.
I think it was just me being Angry
that you, like, why am I getting in trouble? I didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly.
And the thing is, we kind of think, like, this is what I need to keep my sanity. You don't understand. Because you're looking for normalcy.
Exactly.
And you just say, don't remove it. Because if I don't do anything, my mind is going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and whether it's my own denomination or others, and I mean, you can obviously speak into the Free Methodist, whereas I'm coming out of the Brethren in Christ, but there's really no kind of protocol or procedure. It's just kind of... You know, and obviously it, with divorces, it's kind of a case-by-case basis at times, because if the pastor's unfaithful, then we have to do something about that. If the pastor's wife leaves, or there's this divorce aspect, or they come to a mutual agreement, I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into that as well. But, I mean, we don't really have any sort of protocol, I think, as the church on how to deal with that. It's just kind of, well, that's... Sucks.
Sad.
Sad. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll pray for you.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah. Now, I was blessed enough to have Steve walk alongside me.
Yeah.
I had people like Jake introduce me to people like you, where I had this relationship that I could be spoken into.
Right.
But, I mean, other than that, I mean, I may have just sat there.
Yeah. And it just...
And just kind of...
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
On your prayer life, obviously you prayed for the healing of this marriage.
Yes.
Okay. And was there a period of time that you just go, you know what, this prayer stuff is not working, her heart's not changing? Were you frustrated with God? Were you frustrated with the process?
Of course, right? Of course I was frustrated with God.
Oh, okay. So tell me that, and tell me how you just go... That your prayer life, if it didn't stop, or just go, come on, it's not fair.
You know, the funny thing is that I realized through the Psalms. So when I was at Fuller, I had taken a class on the Psalms with a professor who is prolific in the study of the Psalms. And so there, I remember kind of whether, and I think it was God just hearkening me back to that and saying, remember this, because I remember reading things like Psalm 22, where it starts off with, my God, why have you forsaken me? Which is kind of the ancient Jewish way of saying, you know, God, I don't think you exist, or God, you've turned your back on me.
Yeah.
And I realized in reading things like that, and Ecclesiastes and Lamentations, and, you know, all of these spaces where there's anger in the scriptures, that I realized that God is bigger than my anger. And so I realized probably about midway through certain rants where I may be saying, I hate you, God. Why are you putting me through this? Why are you doing this? That's the same as, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Correct.
And that within the scriptures, there's this license to be angry with God. But I think where it reconciles and where I realized some of that difference was, is that, you know, when the ending of Psalm 22 says, but to a people yet unborn, I'll say he has done it.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he had done yet. I had no idea what he had done yet.
Yeah.
And then I paired that with Jesus saying, come to me who are burdened and take my burden, for it's easy and light. And I realized that as I unload that burden of anger on God, what he wants me to do is pick up Jesus' burden, which is light, because it's joy and peace and grace and thanksgiving and forgiveness. And that's a really light burden to have. And I'm sure you know that you probably know plenty of divorced people who are still very bitter because they never unloaded that anger on God.
No,
they kept it on.
Absolutely.
They kept it on themselves.
Yeah, you're right. And what's fascinating to me, and this is one thing I've learned, and when I counsel people that have gone through affairs, they don't get this part. And I don't know if you agree or disagree, but I say stop focusing on the affair. That's not the issue. It's a symptom of a deeper issue.
Of course.
And I had to learn to accept the responsibility of my part for the deterioration of the marriage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, looking back on it, like, I had my own issues.
Right.
Like, I had my own responsibility in things. Like, I could have been more present.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been, I think, in many ways, a better husband.
Yeah.
I absolutely look back and recognize that there are areas that I failed in tremendously.
Oh, and for me, it was interesting because I remember my ex-wife wrote a letter to me on how hurt she was and how broken she was. And she was saying, I don't want to live in a fishbowl, because that's what it's like to be in the ministry. And I remember thinking, there's nothing I'm going to do. I'm just going to pray and the Lord will change her. Hmm. Not change me.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm doing the ministry.
Yeah.
I need to be blessed. And so, therefore, I wasn't aware of the cry outs that she was doing because I was doing God's work.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, she had a follow.
And I think that's the downfall of many pastors.
Yeah.
I mean, whether their marriage fails or not, I think there's a lot of pastors that, you know, I know I was guilty of this as a youth pastor, and then even as something, not, I don't want to say as small, but something as, you know, like even just a men's ministry
leader,
where, you know, you can fall into that prideful trap of, but I'm doing the ministry of God.
All right, yeah.
So you clearly must be the one who's wrong because I'm doing the ministry of God.
We don't say it, but we project it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's where it gets really deep.
Absolutely.
Because obviously you're not going to say it, but
no, of course, yeah.
They feel that.
Yeah.
So your divorce, you went through a divorce. Mm-hmm. When did your divorce come final?
February of 2000 and I want to say
14,
yeah.
Okay, remind you, this is the guy that doesn't know that he just got engaged about a month and a half ago.
No,
I just can't figure out.
It would have been February. February of 2014. You're right, okay. Because it would have been after the 5-year mark, which was in June of 2014.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were on the way for ordination in your denomination,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so now you share how well and support of the church was.
Yes.
And I'm on the MEG board in the Free Methodist, which is the Ministerial Education and Guidance Board.
Yes.
So there's a whole nother level that you and I have to. If it's in our denomination,
mm-hmm.
It's a whole nother level. I'm assuming you had to go through the same thing.
As far as what? I mean, there was a little bit of, like, because my pastor was walking alongside me. My bishop goes to our church, so I knew my bishop. So there were, I didn't necessarily have to go before a board and have them say, like, you know, we christened thee, and you have been forgiven.
Okay,
I mean, I just kind
forgiven.
Of, yeah.
So you felt, how did you feel like the denomination supported you? Going through a divorce, did you feel that they give you opportunities, or they kind of just wipe their hands a little?
I think during that year mark, I felt a little bit abandoned at times because I was kind of put on the shelf for the time.
Okay.
So I think for me, there was this, whether or not the denomination felt that way, it's just how I felt.
Okay.
I felt like I was kind of placed on this shelf, and this is where I sit now.
You're not sure how to deal with Jacob. So
yeah.
We'll put them on the shelf. So then eventually on your divorce thing, when did your relationship, or has it changed with God, then? Are you still bitter and freaking frustrated?
No.
Okay.
No, actually.
So when did that move to,
I've
accepted this, and I'm trusting him, and I'm moving?
I think I don't know if I have, like, an exact date where I woke up in the morning and I was like, everything's changed. This is amazing. But I think it was, as I think the entire Christian life should be, it was a process.
Okay.
It was a journey of making it through and
right.
taking that bitterness and constantly just giving it to God, constantly giving it, constantly being intentional about picking up that burden we had talked about earlier, picking up joy. And sometimes it was waking up in the morning and saying things like, I'm going to be joyful today. Exactly like that. You know, I'm going to forgive somebody today. Like exactly like that. But but I think it was just that continual process of getting to that place where I realized, and this is what I think people who don't go through hurt, which
right.
I think we all go through hurt in different levels.
But sometimes not intensity.
Sometimes not intensity. One of the things that I realized, and I kind of touched on it a little bit already, was that I realized that God is so big.
Mm.
Like, that God is just huge. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, we say that and we kind of laugh because we're like, obviously.
Right.
But I think when you are in the thick of horribleness
mm-hmm.
and hurt and
mm-hmm.
pain, You realize that God is so much bigger than that hurt and pain, and
right.
and I have a different relationship with God now, because in ways that I wasn't able to before,
right.
I now know that I can literally take anything to God in any way.
Yeah.
Like, I can just sit there and just be like, man, this really sucks. Like, why is this happening, God? And I know that, like, God is bigger than my words of saying this sucks to God,
right,
because I think
right.
there are some people that would be like, did he just
totally
say that to God? Like, you can't say it sucks to God, or this is stupid, but
well, you did.
But I did, yeah. So, but I think there was, like, I now
right.
have, I actually, I feel like I have more respect for God.
That's a good point.
Because I see how truly big God
is. And it's almost to the point where you can, for the first time, be authentic.
Yeah.
To be who you are.
Yeah.
With God. Now, give me some insight, because this is where you've never experienced learning forgiveness or dealing with unforgiveness until you experience a spouse that's been completely unfaithful and leaving you. So give me some insights that you learned about forgiveness. Have you forgiven your ex?
Yeah. So I would like to clarify real quickly there. as well as that through the course of the divorce,
okay,
she did, and I stand to believe her on her word,
okay,
did say that she wasn't unfaithful.
Okay.
So she did leave and move to Canada and whatnot, and is with the person that...
She did not have an affair with
him. Yes. So I will. I know you're laughing, Kevin.
I'm just following you.
I just want to make sure that it is clear that the divorce,
it's clear.
On our paper, it is down as irreconcilable differences. So
which
that's,
in California, that's the only way to get
exactly.
Divorced.
It's true. Yeah. So I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure that is clear. That she did say that she was not unfaithful to our marriage. So I will say that. But it still hurts when somebody leaves.
Right.
I think that when Jesus in the scriptures says, let no person tear apart what God has brought together, I actually don't see that as a law anymore. I see that as a protective measure.
Okay.
Because I actually think that, like, God has seen the hurt that people go through when that happens. So when Jesus is saying that, he's not saying this as a law to just say, like, all divorces are evil.
Right.
I think if you look at it deeper, he's saying it as a protective measure to protect his people.
Right.
To protect what is being drawn together.
That's a good point.
So
that's based on your experience.
It is. It is. Absolutely. And so have I forgiven? Of course I have. Yes. I think that if I had not been able to forgive, I would not be bitter. Yeah. Or I would be bitter.
Yeah.
Like I had to forgive.
Right.
I had to forgive myself too.
Right.
I had to forgive those that were involved in our marriage.
Right.
Who maybe could have seen something and stopped it, but didn't, who maybe could have said, hey, Jacob, you know, I think this is an issue that you guys need to deal with. I had to forgive those people. I had to forgive her. I had to forgive myself. I mean, like, you know, I could pin it all on her and say it was all her fault and she's the only one that needs forgiving, but I had to open myself up to.
No, and you're right. You're absolutely right on the forgiveness. And we hear a cliche that forgiveness is not letting them off the hook. It's letting you off the hook. And that is so true for me because I don't want to live with this anger. I don't want to live with this bitterness.
Absolutely.
It's too much draining. And I notice bitterness, you constantly need to fuel it.
Mm-hmm.
You notice that?
Yeah.
You constantly need to think. Bitterness just disappears if you stop fueling it.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So you start focusing on other things. So you went through a divorce, and your ordination track has kind of stopped for a while. It's on
for
the shelf.
Yeah, it was on the shelf for a little while.
And stuff like that. So tell me, you know, you got a beautiful fiance. And
I agree.
I just met her a month and a half ago, and a little over a month ago. And I was joking with her on Sunday, thinking, what are you thinking? That's the first thing I told her when I gave her a hug. I go, what were you thinking of marrying this guy? Which I'm joking, because I love you to death.
And, but you're kind of being serious on the inside.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Okay, cool.
Because I'm protective over her. I don't want to hurt.
You've never even met her before, and you were already being protective.
I know that you and I have baggage. Okay?
It's true. We do. It's true. It's true. You're right. All right, I'll give you that. So.
I'm protecting you. Okay, stuff like that. So anyway, so tell us how you met Laura.
Online.
Oh, really?
Yeah, eHarmony.
I have no idea.
Yeah, eHarmony. So
wow,
I know. And actually, the funny thing is that I mean, I don't want to speak.
Did
on
she
her
see
behalf,
your profile picture?
I put fake ones up. Like, I put bodybuilders with my head photoshopped over them.
Okay.
No, yeah. So
I'm sorry. That was wrong.
No, it's funny. Okay. No, we actually the funny thing is that for both of us, we'd both done some online dating and gone out on dates and stuff like that. But it was actually, I think, I mean, I don't want to speak on her behalf, but I'm fairly certain that I know that it was mine. Like last date, and then I was just going to be done with online dating. Yeah,
because pretty much I'm talking to both of you. Online dating is not that easy.
No,
it sucks. You said
yes.
Yeah, no.
It's horrible.
No, it is horrible.
Yeah.
But dating is horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Online or not, dating
is
awful.
Oh, yeah. All throughout the process, I would frequently tell Jake, I would say, dating is awful. Like, people should just not get divorced because you have to end up dating again. Like, if that's the only reason.
Because when I dated after my divorce, I remember going on a blind date. Did you go on a blind date? I went on a blind date.
No, I went on a blind date.
And I was so frustrated. I wasn't into her, but I was shocked that she wasn't into me. So I was all mad, you know, like, why aren't you into me? Well, I'm not into you either. So it's just like, man, the head games that you go on.
Right? It's horrible.
So both of you have to profile. Both of you said, because you were saying it sucks, the online dating. You were saying it's just, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
So then you guys, I don't even know how you online.
So eHarmony, you go through this, like, there's like an eHarmony ad. Like, eHarmony, go through this, like, vetting process where you kind of, like, there's five questions that you can ask the other person.
Like, and then you psycho?
What's deal breakers for you, or what's important to you, or that sort of thing. And then when you get through that, you can start emailing back and forth via the app. So you still don't know, like, where they really live. Like, you have, like, a general broad city sort of thing. But and then from there, after you're done emailing enough times to find out whether or not the other person's crazy, you can...
It's still true.
So you didn't know if he was crazy yet. So now you went on your first date.
Well, let's get to that point first, because a couple of things about that. She almost didn't show up for the first date.
That's true.
So it actually took...
How come you didn't show up for the first date?
Because it was me. You saw, you heard, you saw the pictures. Oh, okay.
Good grief. Do you get any talk in this relationship?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so tell me why you didn't show up on your first date.
I had a really rotten day at work, and I was tired, and I was pretty fed up with the guys I had been meeting.
Okay.
Not because, like, eHarmony's horrible or don't online date or anything like that, but just because dating's hard, and, you know, you go through a lot of really bad ones until you find the one that's not bad, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Well,
but I was sick of it, and my hair was bad, and... I was tired, and I was just over the whole thing, and it was actually my sister-in-law and my best friend who were like, just go get free tacos.
Okay.
At least you'll get free tacos out of it. So I went.
Because we went to the taco hut, because in talking, I found out that Laura has celiac disease, which means that she has to eat gluten-free. Or die. That's kind of the option. And so...
dramatic.
It is dramatic.
What? Will you die if you eat gluten? Enough gluten? Will you die?
Probably.
Okay, there you go. Okay. So, I just want to point that out.
Okay,
so,
we're doing premarital counseling at the right now.
So we went to the taco hut, and it was awful.
It was a great date, but it was... Terrible food.
Terrible food.
And I think that contributed to the greatness of the date.
Okay. So you had a great first date.
Yes.
We did.
Okay. So how long were you dating before you got engaged?
6 months-ish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's exactly what I did. Now, let me ask you one question, okay? Now, people that experience this, and I don't know about you, Laura, but people that have gone to divorces, they have mistrust issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh my goodness, I'm going to meet. So... Both of you, did you have to learn to trust each other, or did it just come natural, like, I'm going to trust this guy? Because you were experiencing these negative dates after negative dates, right?
Well, and, yeah, and I have been engaged previously, 10 years ago, and split up to a pastor, and we broke up, and I was single for... almost a decade after. So I think that and then just being a woman in the church, you learn early on that if you want to be a woman with a voice, then you're gonna have to fight to be heard. And if you choose to be quiet, then people have access to you. Somehow it means that you don't have to consent to how you're used or where you go or what you do. So I think that we both of us came to where we are today, needing to wake up every day to choose to trust each other.
Okay.
And we had this exact conversation of choosing to trust each other.
Okay.
And the thought process on a pretty regular basis.
Right.
So, can I tell a story from early?
You can tell anything you want. Don't look at Jacob when you tell the story.
Can I do that?
So, maybe. I don't know what the story is.
It was after we had kissed for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and then it was a date or so after that. We were out, we were walking, and there was like this nice little walkway, and Jacob, I was like, this is so adorable, and he was like, oh my gosh, we should totally kiss under this little pergola here, and I like lost my mind. I was like, nope, we ain't doing that. You're not kissing me. That's not gonna.
Did you say that?
I said something along the lines of no.
Okay.
That's probably the best reaction. Yeah.
And then I was just silent.
Just dropped. Does your heart just go?
Poor guy.
So we
kept walking, and because of my experiences in the church with Christian men, it was like I was terrified. I was terrified. Like just the prospect of, because when you kiss publicly like that, it's like claiming territory.
Okay.
Or that had been my experience
okay.
to that point. And then when you deny that, you get punished by, the guys I'd always been with would withdraw. They would start saying mean things, and then until you gave in or
yeah.
left them.
Yeah.
It's a really common experience, I think, for most women.
And I don't think most men get it.
No. Well, we can get really... I think we live in a world where, men have access to what they want and women can't say no. So
you're absolutely right.
But that's not what we're talking
about. No one's going to focus on the objectification of women. Get out of here, Jake. Let me tell
you.
You get two podcasts for the price of one.
She's absolutely
right. No, she is absolutely right. I was going to say, can you finish the story, though, before we go into the objectification of women?
Because the point is that... He did none of those things.
Okay.
He didn't pressure. He didn't push. He didn't withdraw. He kept holding my hand. He kept walking next to me.
Okay.
And he kept talking about whatever it was we were talking about.
I remember
before.
Him
like there was no break. There was
right.
no. He stayed himself.
Right.
And continued to stay himself for probably two more hours of walking with, and I have like this horrible inner monologue of like wrestling with what I had just experienced
right.
And coming to the realization at the end of that I was safe with this man.
See, that's the point. No, this is what gets me all excited. Because what I end up doing is when I do a lot of counseling with couples that are just going at it, I have to say the one number one thing that she wants to feel is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys don't get it.
Yeah.
The guys don't understand it. And they think it's safe because they have this macho ego going on. But
no, I can take care of myself.
Yeah. Ooh, Jacob.
It's true, though.
Okay. So
the girl's got her own house.
So,
she can take care of her. And two really big dogs.
So the thing is, so basically right then you begin to feel safe.
And then the important thing I think that happened next was... 2 days later, we're having dinner again, and I chose to tell him that story. I chose to tell him...
What you just told us.
What I just told you.
Okay.
Like, this... I need you to know that this is my... This is the history that I was wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you gave me and what I now believe about you.
Okay.
And that gave him the freedom to share in return that in that same moment that I had rejected him...
Right.
Quotation marks, rejected him under the pergola... It triggered his own history. Is it okay that I'm telling your part?
Please do.
Thank you. It triggered his own history of being rejected, of intimacy being withheld, of being shamed and pushed away. And he had to wrestle with that whole time, too. No, she's still walking next to me. She's still holding
yeah.
my hand. We are still talking.
Right. Because I think a lot of guys, when they're rejected by the woman, that we don't talk about... our sexuality, how that rejection is deep. that basically if we just can't do it, and so therefore we'll just struggle with that for years, and we're playing this stupid macho game that we have it together, but deep down that's the most insecurity, I think the most painful thing for men to have their wife. So the sensitivity that you had with him and the openness that you had with her, I mean, that's deep.
And I think one of the things that kind of that boils down to that I think that we have that I haven't experienced in I think really any relationship I've ever been a part of is open communication.
Right.
Because on the one hand, she feels safe with me,
right.
but I think it's important for men to understand that it's okay for you to feel safe with her. Like
right.
I feel safe with her. I can
yeah.
share anything with her and know
yeah.
that I'm still going to be loved. And that's, I think that's something that, you know, women and men need to understand together.
Yeah.
That as we're partnering together,
right.
like that's a part of our story and our experience. And I think we've had one really kind of big miscommunication in our entirety of our relationship. And it was something ridiculous. Like we had planned, like we are really good about, you know, hey, I think I have something coming up this Saturday,
right.
but let me check with Jacob or let me check with Laura and
yeah.
see, like, make sure that it's
yeah.
cool that we do this. And I think there was, like, one miscommunication Saturday where we had scheduled something apart from each other.
Mm.
And, like, we sat down, we communicated about that. It was like,
right.
hey, like, this miscommunication
for, like,
was not...
hours.
right?
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
At least you communicated.
And
you
I
know?
Think that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... So, because in
instead
that,
of yelling and fighting,
yeah, and
falling silent,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so, in that space of her still holding my hand and continuing to walk and talk with me, even though I knew that there was something going on in that moment,
right.
but I also felt safe enough the next day to be able to say, you know, or whatever, a couple days later to say, here's how I was feeling at that moment as
and,
well.
And that's perfect. So not only did the Lord restore you, and the thing is, this one I need people to understand, maybe both of you can agree with this or not, that as individuals, you will always be on the restoration path. You're not going to be perfect without issues of brokenness.
Of course.
And stuff like that. But as long as you can communicate that, this is coming out of my brokenness. This is coming out of my experiences.
Oh, yeah.
And there's times in my relationship, my reaction was, am I reacting out of my first marriage or am I reacting out of this issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes I have to take a deep breath and go, ooh, I'm reacting out of my pain. So why am I going to project this on Jennifer?
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair.
No.
So not only that he's restoring both of you into this incredible healthy marriage, but you were, when were you ordained?
February of this year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
February of this year.
In the process, the Lord kind of moving you that you're full ordained in your denomination now. And you told me you were offered in church.
I was.
Okay, but you turned it down because you need to work on...
There's things, well, I mean, with us coming towards marriage and
then,
all that kind of stuff, I think it just wasn't a good good time the timing's
telling
off.
You right now, it's not
so.
A healthy on a relationship.
No.
Being engaged and accepting a church for the first time.
Yes.
You both are being smart on that one.
Thank you.
So when you get married,
that's what everybody's said so far.
Yeah,
I feel like that's definitely of the Lord.
So when are you getting married? Do you get married?
May 20th.
Okay, because I know you're really bad with dates.
Yeah. Well, you know what's great about May 20th? It's
what?
also the date of our first date, right? Yeah, so
cool.
I never have to forget May 20th.
Okay. It's like me when Jennifer goes, let's get married in March 25th, 2000. And I go, why? She goes, so you remember how many years we were married? So I go, okay, it's 2016, 16 years, okay? It's really simple.
So real quickly, I do want to go back to something you were saying that I think is really good. And I think it's something that everybody needs to realize as well, is that because now it's how many years since your divorce?
My divorce was 95.
95. So you're talking 21 years later, and you still at times feel
yes
out of that. So I think something we need to remember as well,
yes,
that everybody needs to remember, is that Jesus heals. There's no doubt about
right,
it.
Right.
But because we are already before that healing broken people,
right,
there may still be brokenness. There may still be scars and scabs and other things that come out of that. And so, you know, it's something that as we continue to communicate, as you and Jen
yeah
continue to communicate,
yeah,
as anybody from any sort of hurt, I mean, my own dad who was divorced and then remarried, and his wife, I love her. My stepmom is, you know, I always say that I've got two sets of parents,
okay,
because I love both my stepdad and my stepmom.
Okay.
I consider them to be co-parents
right,
with my
right,
other parents.
Right.
But, you know, my dad and stepmom were telling me that it's been the same amount, like 20, 30 years or whatever, 20 plus years since they've been divorced and remarried,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. And there's still times where he'll tell her, wow, this is how I feel about something that you just said. And I think that comes from when I was married to,
yeah,
you know, to, in my case, my mom. Like I think that hurt, just because we're healed now,
yeah,
doesn't mean that hurt, like, suddenly just, you know, it's called
right
baggage for a reason. It doesn't just suddenly go away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
and the thing is, when you can identify where it's coming from,
yes,
then you don't have to make it an issue with your wife or your fiance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's times in my life I go, ooh, that's not with Jennifer. And
yeah,
it avoids a lot of conflict. Because if I bring it up and I start going on this, it's not, there's no substance to
exactly
this stupid conversation
yeah
that we're having. So I just got to let it go and just go. Because this is my past that I need to work healed. So not only that you were restored in a
mm-hmm
relationship with beautiful Laura,
mm-hmm,
that you were restored in the ministry as well,
yes,
and you're ordained, you were restored with your dad.
Yeah.
And so stuff like that. So you're a poster child simply on the process of restoration.
If you
think about this.
I've never had it put that way before, but, you know, I have in many ways experienced the restorative nature of what Jesus really did. I mean, I've experienced redemption in many different relationships and ways in my own life that
right
have been incredible. So
fantastic.
And I really do, like, going through divorce, I don't know if
right
you experienced this, but I really kind of had this sense of, like, I don't know how somebody could get through this without Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
I just
no.
I'm people do it all the time.
I know.
I don't understand how, because
I definitely don't know. And you got a good support system within your church.
I did.
Good. And Laura's wonderful.
She is wonderful. I agree.
Thank you. Do you have anything more else before we close out the podcast?
No, I think
Laura,
we should get that second podcast in, though, about women.
I would love it. I would totally love it, because we need to do some kind of type on that, maybe sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate Laura. Thank you. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, my godson, Jake, for sitting on it. Thank you guys for listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
If you're interested, we'll see you next week on the next podcast. And Merry Christmas. Christmas
yeah
coming up, and we hope it's a good Christmas. If you hate Christmas because you're alone, you'll get over it.
That's the opposite of what we've just been talking about. You'll just get over it?
Oh, that's true. Maybe I shouldn't do that way. What would you say if somebody's going through a difficult time at Christmas?
Somebody's going through a difficult time at Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, call Pastor Kevin. Be here at Marina, Christian Fellowship. Because I will say...
That's true. Okay.
I will say, I have three different homes. I have Grace Point, which is my home.
Right.
I have Island Christian Fellowship, which is my dad's church, which is also kind of my vacation,
okay,
my vacation summer home. But I would say
okay
that Marina Christian Fellowship is kind of my beach home.
Well, see,
so,
that
because,
made my day.
Because I mean, when I showed up, you know, to Marina Christian Fellowship,
mm-hmm,
it's been probably a year since I was there last,
okay,
but people were connecting.
Yeah.
Hey, it's good to see you again. The last time you were here, you spoke, and that really impacted me.
You.
And,
they
you know, and
you
friends with people on Facebook. So I would say, if you're going through a hard time,
okay,
I think church is absolutely where you need to be.
Yes.
You need to be, and you need to be in a healthy church, like a Grace Point,
okay,
an Island Christian Fellowship, or a Marino
Christian
Fellowship. Because I think that's...
So let me rephrase it.
Okay,
right?
Cool.
I end this phrase. I'm not going to edit it. Now you're kicking the mic.
I know.
That basically, as Christmas coming up in a few days, if
yeah
you're going through a difficult time, remember, Christmas Day is on Sunday.
Yeah.
And so it'll be a good time to really go to church, really fellowship and really even be authentic when you come to church on Sunday. And so at our church, we have a prayer team. We only have one service on Sunday morning. We have a Christmas Eve service, so join us Christmas Eve at 7 o'clock. We have one service at 10 o'clock. If you want to come to that service at 10 o'clock, there will be a prayer team, and we will pray for you that this will be a time that you will connect with Jesus Christ.
I think that's good.
How about better?
That's great.
It?
I think that's better. That's a better ending. No, that's all hold hands and sing Christmas carols.
No, it's just Christmas carols. Are you sure you want to marry this guy? So anyway, thank you for listening to the podcast. And every Wednesday, when we call it the Hump Day Podcast, join us right after Christmas. We got an incredible podcast. And remember, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And I just wanted to tell you, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. Use it wisely. God bless you. See you next week.
That was fun.
Okay. I like it.
Come back after we're married.